Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my.
We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. I don't need to play football.
I'm coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, welcome back to another episode of the BehindTheSteelCurtain.com flagship podcast. The standard is the standard. It's our third year. We're getting ready to kick off training camp. And as we're getting ready to kick off training camp, my normal co-host, Lance Williams, he's out there doing Lance Williams things out there in California. So I've got my good friend Christopher Carter here with me. Chris, how are you doing this fine evening?
I am doing just dandy, Jeff. How are you doing?
Living the dream, man. That's what I always say, just living the dream, you know, whatever that is, I don't know. But before we get into the thick of things, now's the time of the show where we thank our sponsors. The show is sponsored by Frank Walker Law, the top criminal defense firm to call in Western Pennsylvania and Northern West Virginia. It is home to one of the nation's top 100-ranked trial attorneys in Frank Walker, and we'll be hearing more from them later, but also sponsored by Centerfield Smoke. Centerfield Smoke is the best and most unique Pittsburgh sports apparel provider for Pittsburgh fans everywhere. You can go to their website, centerfieldsmokes.com. This is not just for Steelers fans. If you like the Penguins and the Pirates, they have some great memorabilia there, some great T-shirt designs. You name it, they've got it. And they're going to be putting out some really cool stuff and coming with training camp and the preseason. We're excited to be partnered with them. Let's get right into things, Chris. One of the things I want to talk with you about, and we're trying to be – trying to keep things, you know, most, even Steeler Nation Radio or Steeler, whatever they call themselves, the official Steeler radio show, they're re-airing shows from back in minicamp. You just hear the same old garbage. You know, we're giving you fresh content. We're trying to keep it fresh, trying to keep it real. And one of the things that were probably the most talked about this week was Kevin Green. Kevin Green, obviously the former Pittsburgh Steeler in the mid-90s. He played for several years with Pittsburgh, put up some really good numbers. He's getting into the Hall of Fame this year, which is exciting. I want to say, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, this is the third player from those teams of the 90s following Rod Woodson and Darmani Doss, and they get into the Hall of Fame from that era. Am I correct in that?
Yes, those teams, you are indeed correct.
Okay, so there are two things that came to my mind, and I wanted to run them by you. And the first thing that came to my mind was, when I think of the legendary linebackers for the Steelers in the 90s, I don't think of Kevin Green. Who do I think of? I think of Greg Lloyd. And I don't know, are you the same way, or are you thinking more of the long Hulk Hogan era of Kevin Green? What are your thoughts?
Oh, no, I definitely think of Greg Lloyd. I mean, he set the tone of who the Steelers were back then. And also, I mean, he was there longer. Kevin Green was only a Steeler for 3 years. And though he had a really good 3 years, in 93, 94, 95, and 93, he had, 12 and a half sacks. 94, he had 14, and 95, he had 9. I mean, those are pretty solid numbers, but he wasn't the attitude setter. He wasn't the guy that set the tone for the rest of the defense. And, I mean, Greg Lloyd was feared across the nation, not just for bringing the heat, but because he hit you hard and he didn't care who you were.
Well, and I agree with you. I agree with everything you just said. And I was saying to myself, man, Kevin Green's getting in. How is Greg Lloyd not even being in the conversation? Well, as we all know, statistics matter when it comes to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And so I looked up the statistics. You just rattled off Kevin Green's numbers. I think the biggest issue or the biggest number that you look at is that Kevin Green has a 160 sacks career.
Sacks.
I saw that and I was like, what? That's out of this world crazy. 160 sacks. So I look up Greg Lloyd's stats, and as he said, he played his entire career until 1998. He played his final year with the Carolina Panthers. He only had one sack that final year. He only had 54.5 sacks, 53.5, obviously, with the Steelers. His biggest production was in 1994 when he had 10 sacks. It was the only time he ever reached double digits in his career. And obviously, 94, you had 14 on one side and 10 on the other. That's crazy. That's crazy outside linebacker play. But here's my question for you, Chris. You talk about Greg Lloyd and all the intangibles that people talk about, the intimidation, the tenacity, the hard hitting. Statistically, Greg Lloyd wasn't that great. I mean, he had 93, he had 111 tackles, which is really good. But statistically, for an outside linebacker, am I out of line to say that he wasn't that good?
I wouldn't say he's not that good. Kevin Green was a technician at blitzing the quarterback, at getting to and getting him down on big plays and really any pass play. But Kevin Green was not a really good at all at stopping the run, and that's why he wasn't really, you know, that's why he was passed around so much in his later years. And I mean, the guy had a super long career. You know, you're looking at he played from 85 to 99. I mean, literally, that's like a Peyton Manning-esque career. He played from one decade almost up to, he played from the mid 80s almost up to 2000, to the turn of the millennium. That's in, when he was with the Rams, which is where he spent 8 years to start his career, he had three straight seasons of 16.5, 16.5, and 13 sacks, and then had 10 before he came to Pittsburgh, where we set his numbers. And then in each of his last four seasons, where he spent three with the Carolina Panthers and one with the San Francisco 49ers, he had double-digit sacks each of those seasons. I mean, Kevin Green, at, you know, 15 years into the league, was posting up insane sack numbers like he was in his prime. That's what puts him over the top. And that, to me, does get you on the Hall of Fame. Like, that's the thing. I don't want to knock the guy. I'm not going to be one of the best ever at doing that. But the reason that people think that, and I don't think you're wrong to think that he wasn't the best of the linebackers in that crew, is because that's the one thing that he did, is that, you know, Dick Lowe said he's never seen another pass rusher like Kevin Green, but at the same time, you need to be more than a pass rusher in the NFL because you need to stop the run. And when you think about Chad Brown, Greg Lloyd, and LaVon Kirkland, especially between LaVon Kirkland and Greg Lloyd, those guys also hit hard on the run, and they were a huge part of multiple facets of that Steelers defense, whereas Kevin Green was just there to rush the passer.
Now, you're exactly right. And the more I look into these statistics, the more I see exactly what you're talking about. In his 3 years with Pittsburgh, the highest tackle total that he ever had, and I'm talking about Kevin Green, was 67, which, like I said, I mean, that's not horrible, but again, that's not, you know, setting the world on fire, whereas you look at Greg Lloyd, as I mentioned, is 111 tackles in 1993. For an outside linebacker, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's getting after the ball carrier.
Yeah.
He had several where he was in the 90s. 96, he was marred by injury. We won't even count that, really. But, I mean, in his prime, the lowest tackle he had in 1990 was 62, not counting his rookie year where he had 33. They're different styles of players. So here, this is a good segue into my next topic in regards to this Hall of Fame class, in regards to the Steelers of the 1990s, in regards to Kevin Green's comments that he made this week, which is he said that this should open the door. He hopes that this opens the door for more players on those teams. And he mentioned Greg Lloyd. He mentioned Carnell Lake. I'm trying to think, honestly, if there's any other player, because we know Woodson and Armani Dawson already in. Kevin Green, I am kind of surprised, by the way, a quick sidebar, that he's going to go in as a Steeler after only playing 3 years in Pittsburgh, although some would say those were his greatest years and he made it to the Super Bowl. But think to yourself about those teams in the 90s. We talked to, you know, Greg Lloyd. I don't know if he has the numbers to get into the Hall of Fame. He never won a Super Bowl. That's important if you don't have the numbers. Carnell Lake was, I thought he was tremendous. I mean, the guy could do it all. He started as a rookie. He moved from safety to cornerback and back and forth. He was very versatile. But does that get you into the Hall of Fame? I'm not so sure. He doesn't necessarily have the numbers. I'm going to look up his stats here in a second. Can you think of any player on either side of the football, offense or defense, that you feel could be a Hall of Fame candidate from those 90 Steelers teams? I'm just curious. I'm struggling to think of somebody. I mean, even think of Yancey Thigpen. No, not really. I don't agree with that. Neil O'Donnell. I think if you said Neil O'Donnell, you'd get shot in Pittsburgh if you were in the 4-1 area code. But I mean, even Barry Foster had a great run, but he was only there for like 3 years. Bam Morris, we know how that ended. Eric Green, maybe Eric Green, and he was more of the late 80s, early 90s, and then he kind of got phased out. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, when I look at those two, I mean, at those teams, I mean, I don't know why you left a clear, obvious name off the list, Jeff, in Cordell Stewart. That guy deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. Sorry, that's hard to get out. But
seriously, don't
say that. But that's what I'm saying. It's like there's not that many amazing, great players that deserve the Hall of Fame. And there were really, really good players on those teams. Carnell Lake is a very good player. I even venture to say that Lake was a great player. I mean, he put up some solid numbers. He only had 16 interceptions, but I mean, he forced 17 fumbles in his career. He took two back for touchdowns, scored 5 touchdowns in his career. He had 25 sacks. And also because of the versatility that he brought. I mean, when Rod Woodson went out for the season, they switched Carnell Lake to corner because they had no other choice. And he did it seamlessly, and the defense didn't miss a beat. And it's things like that that you're like, man. And for a while, there was a time when Carnell Lake was a feared and respected safety in the league. Now, he didn't have the big name attention like a Steve Atwater because he didn't have those, like, super iconic moments. But in Pittsburgh, he was well respected. And then the other person I would say you'd have to that you mentioned was LaVon Kirkland. I mean, LaVon Kirkland was the big bad middle linebacker that could move all around. I mean, he was kind of like the tone setter right before Ray Lewis came into the league in the mid '90s. He was the guy that you feared over the middle. He was huge. He was fast. He got all over the place. He had 11 interceptions in his career. And you look at the size of this guy. He looked like a defensive tackle, but he moved like a middle linebacker should. He always laid big hits. He had 771 tackles in his career, 19 and a half sacks. That's a guy that I think that if you were to add, it'd be between him and Carnell Lake. But you also have to consider this, Jeff. Before I would even bother to bring in anybody from the 90s, I'm still looking at what's up with LC Greenwood. What's up with Donnie Shell? Mm. What's up with, Andy Ruff? You know, there's all these other guys. Ernie Holmes, and maybe not Ernie Holmes, his career wasn't there, but like Dwight White, these are great players that never got in from those 70s squads, and the only reason that you can say is because they're part of the Steelers, and they other people made them great, and that's ridiculous. My opinion, Sam Davis should be in there, but an offensive lineman, it's already tough, but put him on that 70s squad, it's even more difficult unless your name's Mike Webster. So for me, do they deserve to get in the Hall of Fame? Maybe on their own merits. Because if you compare them, you could argue comparing them to some of the other players that have made it into the Hall of Fame, then you could say, okay, yeah, they deserve to be there because such and such made it there. Because there's some people in the Hall of Fame, I'm like, why did they make it, other than, they were popular for a time. But when you compare it to the legacy of other Steelers who are still waiting to get inducted, then I had to say, no, I don't think that they would get it. So there's arguments for both. Generally, I don't think anyone else may ever get it unless it's like an old man crew and they're just doing this to be nice. Or if Carnell Lake goes on to improve his coaching career and becomes a well-renowned secondary or even a defensive coordinator that becomes legendary in his own right. But it's going to take more than what he has right now to get in the Hall of Fame. And we've seen that with the other Steelers that are in the wings waiting.
Well, the thing is, too, is when you bring up the fact of, okay, like a coordinator coach that also played, look how long it took Dick LeBeau to get into the Hall of Fame. And he had incredible statistics when he played. I mean, he led the NFL in interceptions, I believe, for years until I can't remember who was it that broke his record. But still, he was still in the top 5, I believe, in interceptions when he was inducted into the Hall of Fame. Looking at Carnell Lake's numbers, I'm sorry, like you said, I mean, those are some good teams. But what kind of, in my mind, when I think of the 90s Steelers, they were good teams. They didn't have that one or two player outside of Rod Woodson and Darmani Dawson, who has an interior offensive lineman. It's hard to really call them a superstar, but just because they don't have the exposure as the elite skill set players do. But Carnell Lake, he doesn't have the numbers. I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, I love the guy as a player. Right. I think he's a good coach as well. He just doesn't have the numbers. What's insane to me is that twice in his career with Pittsburgh. In 1997, he made the Pro Bowl as a cornerback / strong safety. He had six sacks. Six.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the Steelers
yep.
now, if he had six sacks, he'd be third on the team in 2015 because obviously we had Cameron Hayward at seven and Stephon Tuitt at 6.5. That's crazy. He had five in 1993. The guy was a great player. He's a great player, but I'm not going to say he – oh, let me rephrase that. He was a good player. But I think the great players get into the Hall of Fame, and that's the way it should be. You know, as fans
right.
of the black and gold, we want every single player to get in. And do I think that L.C. Greenwood and Donnie Shell deserve to be in there? You bet I do. But at the same time, I also realize that when we look at these 90 Steelers, that's the tough question. Now, we're not going to get into, like, the 2000. Now you're opening up a whole can of worms there with players like Jerome's already in, but Hines Ward, he's the next one that's going to be tough to gauge because he has the statistics. He has two rings. But is he in a position like wide receiver where that's you're talking about rarefied air if you make him to the Hall of Fame at that position? That's going to be a different topic altogether. We have the time. I don't want to talk at length about this. But what's your knee-jerk reaction? Take your black and gold glasses off because I have to do that from time to time too. When you think Hines Ward, you think about his statistics. Do you think Hall of Famer right away, or do you think he's going to have to wait a while? Or do you think he might not even get in?
I think he's going to get in, Jeff. But it's going to be a long time simply because he's part of that Steelers list of players that will. They can say, oh well, he wasn't the best in his caliber because there was T.O. and there was Randy Moss while he was in the game and yada yada yada. But at the end of the day, he has to get in because Hines Ward defined an era of football. He was the hardest hitting wide receiver that anyone's ever seen. He knocked people out. They made rules to stop him because he was hitting people too hard. I mean, the iconic knockout punch on that he put on Ed Reed on Monday Night Football, it's still talked about to this day. People called him dirty, but Hines Ward didn't hit you in the back. He hit you in the face. You know, he ran right up to and he let you know afterwards. And if you hit him, he got up smiling. He was like, hey, you know, good shot, man. I'm going to get you back. And at the same time, he was a great receiver. And he wasn't just a good receiver. He had, what did he have, 10,000 catches? One 10,000 yards, 1,000 catches. Sorry, I'm mixing up my numbers. He had legendary numbers in those regards. He was unstoppable for a time. I mean, he was a Super Bowl MVP. I mean, when you look to be a wide receiver in the league, if you can be a Hines Ward that can be a great receiver and be a team leader and set an era of like be an all-time blocker at your position and knock people out and set the tone for people and do it for as long as he did because remember he was a late 90s draft guy. Then he lived all through the 2000s and then was there for the early to the 2010-2011 season for the Steelers, still making an impact, still being a leader, he would have to get in. Take off your Steelers glasses, and you'll still see that. Because here's the thing. When people say take off your Steelers glasses, often the people that say that, they have anti-Steelers glasses on because they're like, oh, you know, that guy doesn't deserve to get in. I mean, many people were like, Jerome Bettis should wait. And I'm like, the guy is in the top 10 of all-time NFL rushers. And is the best big back to play the game. How did he have to wait, you know, years to get in? That's ridiculous, you know. I think there's a weird system. However they make it work, I don't think Chris Carter should have had to wait. He's not a Steeler, but he's a guy I didn't think he should have had to wait years to get in. And meanwhile, Warren Sapp got in. I just think he's overrated. I don't like the system for Hall of Famers. I think Hines Ward should get in there. Steelers glasses on or off. He's a Hall of Famer. He should get in, but I think we're going to be – Jeff, you're going to have – you might have some grandkids by the time that happens.
Well, yeah, and we can talk about, you know, another topic is Troy Polamalu a first ballot Hall of Famer. Some people say no because there's not a lot of safeties in the Hall of Fame outside of, you know, guys like Ronnie Lott, but I think he is. But then again, I'm also a homer. So let's kind of switch gears here. And we're getting away from the greats of the black and gold, and it seems like every year there's another Steeler being enshrined in Canton, Ohio, which is a great thing. Kevin Green, like you said, he plays for a lot of teams, but, hey, he's going in as a Steeler. Good for him. We're always happy to have – I used to compare him with Hulk Hogan with that long hair flowing out of his helmet, get the crowd all pumped up. He was a great player, great Steeler, even though it was short-lived. I want to talk about a few other things – But before we get into that, we have a caller, and it's someone who used to call in every week. We haven't heard from him much this summer. We got Vito. Vito on the line. Vito, you there?
Gentlemen, good evening. How are you so far? Enjoying your summer?
Yeah, man. So far, so good. How about you?
Good. I had a couple of topics I wanted to discuss.
Sure.
First one was, because you're on the defense, I'm thinking about a player who I thought was going to be phenomenal and then just died out, which was Lamar Woodley.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Do you remember when he first came into the league? Was it his first or second year when you had Harrison on one side and you had him on the other side? They were wreaking havoc all over the place, and I really thought that this guy was going to be the real deal. I really thought that he would have a career with the Steelers for at least a decade, and I don't know what happened, but, I mean, he put up some pretty big numbers his first couple of years. Correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm just wondering what happened to him, and now that he's out on the sidelines looking for work. I think you guys wrote an article this week about should Pittsburgh take a shot at him, and, you know, I guess my thoughts are whatever happened to him. Why did he just fall apart? Why did the wheels just fall off on that guy? Because I just felt he had a long career. I thought he would have been just as good as a Harrison, really. What are your thoughts on that?
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, here's the reason. But Lamar Woodley, I mean, it was a very sad way how his career ended in Pittsburgh, at least the time that it was now. Lamar Woodley was originally looking like you said, he was going to be the next James Harrison. He was huge. He was making plays in the backfield. He was stopping the run. He was part of that. He had part of that intimidation factor in him. I mean, he made some huge plays. I mean, there was a time that for the first, 5 years of his career, he was averaging over a sack and a half in playoff games. He was unstoppable. But what happened was the Steelers signed him to a humongous contract, a contract that he earned as a pass rusher. But then he had a string of injuries. In 2011, he tore his hamstring playing against the Patriots, a game which he stepped up huge in without James Harrison. He had two sacks on Tom Brady in key situations, and then he got hurt in that game, and he never returned to form. And it was like for the next two seasons, he was just a guy. He was kind of just a guy around. He wasn't making the big plays. He never looked like he was able to turn, and he kept getting hurt. So in that process, the Steelers were paying huge superstar money for this guy every season and couldn't sign anyone else. So then they realized, and Kevin Cole was like, we got to let this guy go because he's a good player, but if we keep waiting around for him, we're never going to be able to sign the new guys that we're bringing in here. And, I mean, it'd be tough to sign like a Marquise Pouncey, a Marcus Gilbert, two players that we signed to, good long contracts, or you would sign an Antonio Brown. It would have tied up our salary cap even more, and they had to get rid of him. And literally, Vito, this is how big that deal was. They just finished paying him off, and he's been gone for, 2-3 years? I mean,
yeah.
That's the thing. He had huge dollars attached to him, and it was just an unfortunate situation because the team loved the guy. He grew up in his young years. If you remember, if you ever watched the America's Games of the second season of when they won Super Bowl 43, there were times throughout the season where you can hear and also in just like the sideline things, you can hear where he's like really amped up, he's ready to be part of the team, and the older players are just mentoring him like, dude, you're not trying to be good, great, you're trying to be good, we're here to be great, and he's like, oh, you're right. And you see him just sort of start to understand it. Like Casey Hampton, had to sit him down. And then at halftime of Super Bowl 43, after James Harrison just scored that touchdown, after that happens, the Warriors run off the field. They're going into the sideline, or they're going into the locker room, he's talking to the camera saying, yeah, that's what we do. We put up points. And Mike Tomlin comes right behind him. He says, hey, when I was last time I was here, we scored three times. And he says, so get your butt in the locker room. It's kind of like he went through that maturation period, and he got better from that. In 2010, he had a huge season stepping up for the Steelers and helping them get to the Super Bowl. And you saw that maturation. It was just so sad to not see that fulfill in him being a long-time and long-standing great linebacker. He was great for, I think, two or three seasons, and then his injuries caught up with him. And whether or not his injuries are because of his being in shape or whatever, because a lot of people said he was just out of shape. I don't think he was. I think it was just an unfortunate series of events that it was tough to recover from, and those things, once you tear up your muscles in the wrong way, you may never recover from them in any facet. So I think it was an unfortunate situation, and do we pick him up? I think it would be a good pickup if we can't find anybody else and we're needing another veteran outside linebacker. But you know, the Steelers got to prepare for tomorrow. If he can come in cheap, bring him in. If he can't, we got to keep moving the direction moving. But that's what I think happened to him. What's your take, Jeff?
Well, first about his career, I think that a lot of people, they all want to say, well, he was out of shape. You know, I remember Brett Keisel called him fat butt a lot and stuff like that. People are underestimating a torn hamstring and what that can do. And you tear your hamstring, it's going to severely hamper your ability to be in good shape, in quality condition for an NFL game. And because of that, I think that after he injured that hamstring, he was never able, because if anyone's ever pulled a hamstring, I don't care if you're walking down the street or you're playing a pickup football game and you tweak that hamstring, you think that it's fine. The next thing you know, you go to accelerate one more time, and what happens? Going to re-injury all over again. You had to think that was in the back of his mind, and you creep that injury in the back of your mind. You're hesitant on the field. You're hesitant in your conditioning. You can get re-injured more often. I think that was kind of one of the reasons why the Steelers said, look, it's just not going to work out anymore and we let you go. But from an overall standpoint, Lamar Woodley was a great player here in Pittsburgh. No one thought his career would be that short-lived in black and gold. But do I pick him up again? I'm going to say no. The only reason that I would say no is the only way I would think about it is if there was more than one injury on the team. And so if Harrison goes down or even Jarvis Jones gets hurt, you still have Anthony Tranquillo there. But you have to wonder, okay, do we need to bring in a veteran, someone that doesn't have to play every down? That would be your only situation. And like Chris said, it would have to be a very team-friendly deal. I'm talking very, very minimal payment. And I don't know if Lamar Woodley would be willing to do that. Most NFL players still have that ego about them, and that would be interesting to see. But that's just my take. Vito, what else you got for us tonight?
Talking about Pro Bowlers and talking about Hall of Famers, I mean, my question was, we're looking at Big Ben, of course, because, you know, of what he's brought to the team and what he means to the team. And we don't know how many more years he's got left. I mean, I hope he has at least a good four more. But do you think he needs to win another Super Bowl to make it to the Hall of Fame? For him to get enshrined, do you think he needs another ring? Or do you think he's good enough today with all the stats that he's put in and everything, that he would get there regardless?
I think that it's going to take. At least one or two more years. Not even necessarily Super Bowls, Vito, but of him just having big number seasons for people to not question it. But right now, Vito, I'm telling you, people are going to wait. If he retires in 2 years with just average numbers and no more Super Bowl rings, people are going to question it, because that's what people are doing these days. They're going to be like, oh, well, I mean, people don't like Ben Roethlisberger for a lot of reasons in some circles. I remember hearing this debate, but when you look at the numbers he's putting up right now with Antonio Brown, if he continues to do what we know that he can do, and if he improves and doesn't get injured these next few seasons, and say he does win a ring, it's going to be undeniable. But I think right now, to me, he's definitely a Hall of Famer. He's done enough for the game. He's been an amazing player for such a long time. He's been iconic. Even when we look at these top 100, people still don't want to rank him in the top five. He gets no love in those regards. But at the end of the day, everyone knows that this guy was an iconic quarterback in football. It's been a span of what? Past 15 years or since 2001, there's only been like two seasons when the AFC wasn't represented in the Super Bowl by Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, or Ben Roethlisberger. And the only other times it was with Rich Gannon or Joe Flacco. I mean, that he was part of that era, and he was one of the he's established the Steelers as one of the better franchise, what better teams of that era. He's going on to establish more numbers right now. So I think he should get in. But to solidify it, to make it unquestionable, to make it first ballot, he needs to win another ring, and I think he needs to have a superstar season here with Antonio Brown.
For me to chime in on this, I think that it's really one of the – Chris, you nailed it on the head if you ask me. The guy is a proven winner. You know, he's won at every stage of his career in college and then in the NFL. He has the record for most wins and most consecutive wins for a rookie. a rookie quarterback. He's won two Super Bowls. Now is the time, like what Chris said, he has to put up the stats. And we just talked about all those great Steelers from the early or the mid '90s, where clearly some things that are holding them back, like a Carnell Lake, would be the lack of statistics. Greg Boyd would be another one. So I look at it, and I think that certainly Ben Roethlisberger should, with the weapons that he has in the offense, be able to pad his stats a little bit. If he wins another one, I think it's a lock. I doubt there's a quarterback that wins three Super Bowls that isn't in the Hall of Fame. But still, that's my thought. If he can get the stats and yet also get another ring, it's a lock. I think it's a lock anyways, but that's just me. But, Vito, we appreciate the phone call. It's good to hear from you again. We'll be back probably weekly up until the season starts.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great evening, and I think 2016 could be that year. It's shaping up to be one of those years. We were so close last year. Hopefully this year we're right there on the cusp.
I sure hope so, Vito. Yep. Well, we're going to keep our fingers crossed, man. It's going to be exciting. We'll say that for sure.
That's it. Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good night.
Hey, you too. Take it easy. And I guess now is as good time as ever for me to say that if anyone's listening live out there and you want to call in, you are more than welcome to. The phone number is 347-850-8581. Again, that's 347-850-8581. If you're on hold, you'll get to listen to the show. We will get you on the air. It just might not be right away, so please bear with us. But we're about the midway point of the show, and now we'd like to give our sponsors a little bit of a shout-out. And so one of our sponsors is Frank Walker Law. Let's hear a word from our sponsors.
Smart or stupid? Those strobing lights in your rear view? That flashlight shining in your face?
License, registration, and insurance, please.
The little adventure you're about to have with this guy?
I'll need you to step out of the vehicle, please.
Okay, so you've done something stupid. Fix it with a smart move.
For DUI or criminal defense, call Frank Walker of FrankWalkerLaw.com. He knows his way around a courtroom. 412-532-6805. 412-532-6805 or FrankWalkerLaw.com.
Yes, our sponsor is Frank Walker Law, the top criminal defense firm to call in Western Pennsylvania, Northern West Virginia, one of the nation's top-ranked trial attorneys in Frank Walker Law, and also Centerfield Smoke, centerfieldsmoke.com. It's the best and most unique Pittsburgh sports apparel provider for Pittsburgh fans around the globe. Make sure you check them out at centerfieldsmoke.com. Okay, Chris, let's dig into some more stuff here, more current stuff, stuff that's a little bit more relevant to here we are. As we sit here and only 9 days away, most people when they listen to this, it'll be 8 days away from training camp. The players are reporting into training camp. So everyone's getting excited up for that. Like Vito said, you think it's the year, everyone's amped up. Let's look at the schedule. And then it's been out for months, okay? It came out, I think, in April. But still, it evolves. As we saw it last year. Everyone said, oh, my gosh. After the bye week, it's like a murderer's row schedule. And they got to go to Seattle. The Colts come into town. They got to play the Bengals, the Ravens. What ended up happening? Now, they go to Seattle. That was tough. We know how that game ended up. Andrew Luck lacerates his spleen or something like that. He's out. They have to play Matt Hasselbeck. Joe Flacco tears his ACL. He's out. Now, they end up losing, but they have to play Brian Mallett. Andy Dalton gets hurt in the first, I don't know, 2 minutes of the game, and they end up playing against Eddie McCarron. The schedule evolves. The schedule changes. But on paper, looking at it right now, what are some of the marquee matchups that you're looking forward to in the 16-game slate? Now, I'm looking at it right now, and I've got mine. Are you prepared, or do you want me to go first? Let's try to name three games. It could be for whatever reason. You could just say, you know what, I really hate this team, and so I'm really looking forward to this game. But give me three games. If you want to go to four, I understand you can go to four. But three to four games, you're like, you know what, this is the game. And why? You ready? You want me to go?
I'm ready. I'll go with four simply because I should.
Okay.
Because it's going to be tough to limit to four games. Okay, first game for me, and this is just me. I'm gonna say the first big game that I'm going to look at, if I had to pick four out of four, would be at home against the Kansas City Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are an up-and-coming team. I think that they're They're going to be tough. They beat us the last time. This is going to be one of those games that we absolutely need to win. I think that the Redskins, the Bengals, and the Eagles, those are teams that we should beat. But it's like I think the Chiefs is going to be an iconic game. It's on national television. They have a tough pass rush. Exactly. They need to get through this game and win this game. And I think if they win this game, they'll at least beat one of those three teams. They make sure they're at least 2-2. But they need to win this game right. I remember Paul Zeiss on Pittsburgh Radio said that the Chiefs game was insignificant last year. Well, if they had won the Chiefs game, we wouldn't have been sweating in that last game of the season, hoping for the Jets to pull out, to lose to the Dolphins or whoever they lost to. But looking at them, and then 4 weeks later, 3 weeks later, sorry, you got the New England Patriots. Anytime you play the Patriots, it's a big deal. But they're coming to Pittsburgh for the first time since 2011. Yes, the first time. I mean, Lamar, that was back in that Lamar Woodley game we were just talking about. The last time that they visited Heinz Field, and they got their butts whooped. I think that's always a huge game. You got to beat Tom Brady. Send the message: we're not afraid of you. We're here to beat you. I think that if they do that, it really bodes well for moving forward in the season. And again, this is not saying that other games aren't important, but these two games, I think these are key games that everyone will be watching across the country. Other two games, I'm tempted to say the Cowboys because of the rivalry in the history of the NFL, but I'm going to skip the Cowboys. I'm going to go down to the Colts as the next big game because it's in Indianapolis. The Steelers have kind of had their way with the Colts for some time now, but it's going to be Andrew Luck coming off an injury. I think that the Colts are going to be in a lot better shape this year. And I think that's going to be a big game to deal with. I think it's going to be rough. It's going to be tough. And the Steelers got to pull it out. And I think it's going to be a bit of a shootout. They're in Indianapolis. They got their field turf in the dome. They're going to be feeling good. I think it's going to be a big one. Also, a Sunday night game on NBC. And my last big game, of
that's,
course.
That's Thanksgiving, Chris.
Oh, wait, I'm sorry. That's Thanksgiving. I'm mixing myself up. I forgot all about that. Right, you're right. Yeah, it is Thanksgiving. Oh, man, and we do not have a good record on Thanksgiving, man. Last time it was the Ravens game when Bell got knocked out to get his helmet off right as he was falling into the end zone. They called it dead, and the infamous Jacoby Jones play where Mike Tomlin stood in his way for 5 seconds.
Yep.
So
yep.
Everyone said
yep.
they tripped
yep.
him. And then the time before that was the infamous coin flip game with Jerome Bettis in 1996?
No,
it was definitely after 94 98 because we went 6-10 that
okay.
season. We were 5-20.
You're right.
Yeah. That game, I hate that game. That game was disgusting. In fact, we played against Charlie Bass that game. I was so mad at that game. Oh, man. So Thanksgiving, bad memories. Got to win the game. That makes it even bigger. Yeah, that's definitely my number three game on here. And then the number four game, and then this is definitely Sunday night football. It's going to be in Cincinnati against the Bengals. We played them early, but this will be the first time the team, if he's back, will get a chance to see Vontaze Perfect again. And in my mind, because he's on a four-game suspension, but my mind right now, honestly, you gotta be civil. You want to play by the rules, and you don't want to encourage, and you want to be classy out there, and you don't want to encourage things that are against the rules. But if I'm Mike Tomlin right now, and I just saw Vontaze Burfict take out Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, and Ben Roethlisberger all in the same season, I have a target on that guy. I'm like, look, we're out here. If he gets near any of our players, you light his butt up. The way that David DeCastro started lit him up late in the playoff game when he pancaked the mess out of him in the end zone. Yeah, and seriously, it's at some point you have to police the game yourself because the Steelers were under. I mean, he tore Bell's ACL and celebrated over him. The hit to Antonio Brown was blatantly targeting his head when he didn't have the ball. He kneed Roethlisberger in the shoulder after he was already down in sack. This guy, he does not stop. I mean, he did it against Cam Newton the year before when he tried to twist his leg out well after the play, and the play is like well over, and Cam Newton's like, get off me. You know, this guy is a threat to the game. He served his suspension, and, you know, you can say, like, oh, let's see how he does. man, I'm coming out here. If he does one thing, if he's looking like he might, you set the tone, you knock him around, and you're like, listen, we're not play here to play these games, and this is going to be a huge game. The last time the Steelers were here, they had trash thrown at them. Ben Roethlisberger was hurt as he was being carted off. They threw trash at him. We had commenters and readers that were from behind the steel curtain. They talked about the game. They went to that game. They said that security had to escort them out because it was that crazy in Paul Brown Stadium for the Bengals. That's going to be a big game. That's going to be my – if I had to pick four, those are my four. It's the Chiefs. It's at home against the Chiefs, at home against the Patriots, away against the Colts on Thanksgiving, and away against the Bengals late in December.
Well, wow, man, you got me all jacked up, man, talking about all this rivalry stuff. I'm getting all pumped up, and then the season's still a long ways away. I think it's 55 days away to the first game. But still, this is tough, folks, and I tell anybody, hey, you sit down at your computer, pull up the schedule, sit at your phone, whatever the hell you're using, I don't care, and try to pick four games that you think are, like, these are the ones you got to watch. Because you could say from a fan's point, like what you said, Chris, like, if I'm just from a fanboy perspective, oh, I'm circling Dallas because I hate the Cowboys. I hate their fans. I hate everything about that organization. I hate the fact that the Steelers only have one more Super Bowl than they do, even though that's still elite. I don't want them to have really anything close to that. So I would say that. But if I'm looking at it from a football perspective, I don't circle that game. It's a non-conference game. It's a non-divisional game, obviously. It's not going to matter. Okay, so I'm looking at the schedule. I agree with the Chiefs thing, but I'm going to skip the Chiefs game because it's early. I think that in terms of tiebreakers, it could come back. We'll see. Okay, I think the Patriots are number one. I don't think there's anyone in their right mind that wouldn't have this on their list of four. Now, these four that I'm naming are not in any specific order, mind you. I'm not saying that this is the number one game. It's just the first one I'm listing. Tom Brady comes behind Steel. Like you said, he doesn't do that often. Thank you, NFL schedule makers. And at the same time, this could be very significant in terms of the seeding in the playoffs and possibly getting into the playoffs. I'm not going to go ahead and just guarantee the Steelers are going to even make the playoffs, even though everyone thinks that they will. Patriots, they're on the list. Good. Going to go somewhere that probably most people wouldn't. And I'm going to go to after the Patriots game, the Steelers go on a bye, and then they come back, and they go to M&T Bank Stadium on November 6th to play the Ravens. That's the second one on my list. The Ravens swept the Steelers last year, and there's nothing more sickening to fans than to see your arch rivals, the Baltimore Ravens. The Bengals stuff, I know all about that, but there's no way it's even close to what the Ravens-Steelers is, and in terms of historically and all that stuff. The Ravens game will be big. It's going to be the first time that the Steelers play the Ravens in that season. It's going to be big for them to get a win. You get one on the road, steal one at M&T Bank, you're sending a message, in my opinion. Okay, so that's my second one. Patriots at home, Ravens on the road. Now's when it gets tough. You know, I'm definitely throwing that December 18th game against the Bengals, like you said, for all the reasons that you said, as my third. But where does the fourth one go? Because there's a lot of different ways. And it's between the Buffalo game and Indy. I think Buffalo's going to be a lot better than people think. And I think they're going to be in the mix in December. But I'm going to agree with you and go with the Indianapolis Colts. You look at the AFC South, there's really no one that if Andrew Luck stays healthy, they had a good draft this year. There's no reason why they shouldn't win that division. I mean, you can say what you want about the other teams that are there, but I expect the Colts to be the team to beat. And on prime time, on Thanksgiving, all those reasons that you said, I'm going to say the Indianapolis Colts. So, again, Patriots at Ravens, at Colts on Thanksgiving, and at the Bengals. Only one of those is at home at Heinz Field. You have to do it on the road. My dad has always told me, I mean, as long as I can remember, he said, Jeff, win all your home games, split on the road, what do you got? 12-4 record. And everyone in their mind would say, we'll take it, we'll run to the bank, we'll probably have a high seed, we'll probably have a first-round bye with 12-4, and that would be phenomenal. Okay, so we'll see how that pans out. And I forgot to mention that they play the Ravens at 4:30 on Christmas Day. That's going to be another exciting one. So a lot of people look at strength of schedule. That can change. It's all based on 2015 stuff. It's going to be an exciting season. I definitely look at the schedule and think that, you look at the first half, second half. The Steelers are capable of beating every single team in the league, period. There's really not much else that needs to be said. So, we'll be curious to see what your games to watch are. If you don't call in the show, you can certainly leave those in the comment section on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. It'll be interesting to see what games everyone's looking forward to seeing this upcoming year. Chris, quickly, we're talking about training camp. But I want to get away from the training camp battles a little bit because I think we're going to talk about that a lot next week. The week of training camp, we're going to be really talking about every position, potential camp battles, all that stuff. I don't mean to put you on the spot here, but if you can think of one or two maybe sleepers, and a sleeper pick, in my opinion, does not have to be anyone that they don't have to be undrafted. They could have been a drafted player, but someone that wasn't on the team last year, whether they're a rookie, whether they're on the practice squad, I'm not counting the practice squad as on the team, on the roster. Who might be a sleeper pick, one or two, that you can give me or the listeners to possibly make the team in 2016?
Okay, sleeper picks. You want three? I got you. We got, I'd say one as a sleeper, and this is actually, I'd say DeMarcus Ayers. He's the seventh round pick, the first seventh round pick for this year out of the draft, wide receiver out of Houston. He was 5'11". He didn't run like a greatest 40. A lot of that was due to his injuries. But the reason he was drafted was because he was a spectacular return guy for Houston. When you looked at him on tape, he was juking everybody out their shoes. He was running past people. He looked really, really solid as a player. And right now the Steelers, they're still lacking that guy at the return position. They still have to put Antonio Brown back to return punts, and they don't want to do that anymore. They're tired of doing that. They've been doing that, and it's been killing them. And when you look at his return numbers in Houston, he only had one touchdown on kick returns and one touchdown on punt returns. But he was pretty solid. I mean, he was pretty quick. But also, if you look at the way that he ran routes, he was always very shifty and. He really got just 1 year to start, and that was his junior year in 2015. But he put up 1,221 yards for six touchdowns. He was really quick. He got a few handoffs, scored a touchdown on the ground as well. You look at this guy, and you're like, man, if he does not remind you of an Antonio Brown type player just in college, you know, he could do it all. He can be here. He can be there. And if he can work to improve his game, if he can become faster and have good hands, you could have a good solid option for the future of the team. Because remember, Antonio Brown, when he was on the team roster, I mean, it was Hines Ward, Mike Wallace, Emmanuel Sanders. They were the priorities, and Antonio Brown made the list, and he was a person that was. I mean, Randall L was also there at the time. But Antonio Brown made the list because he was a return man in his first NFL career game and first NFL career touch. He took it back against the Tennessee Titans, and I think it's going to be something like that for DeMarcus Ayers. So I think he becomes one of your sleepers to make the team this season. Moving on the defensive side of the ball, I feel a little weird saying this because I'm not. To me, it shouldn't be a sleeper, but I think that a lot of people don't. I'm going to say this name because a lot of people might have forgotten about this guy, Travis Feeney, the rookie on the fourth round pick from Washington. I think he's long, he hits hard, he's fast. You know, he's a guy that I think he fits the prototype of a tweener linebacker that could go between a pass rusher and a middle linebacker really quick, and he has good straight line speed. For Pittsburgh, and I think that he's gonna fit in this new shot, nickel sort of defense that has subsets a lot more, and they can move him around. I think he's gonna fit the team because of that. He has good athleticism. I think if he learns the system all right, and he finds his groove, I think that he's gonna be a player that Mike Tomlin's gonna be comfortable with on the roster. Choking up right now. I'm talking way too fast. I think he's going to be a player that's going to find a place on the roster. He's going to make some plays here and there, and they're going to want him in there because of his versatility. So that would be number two. Now, number three, this one I've gone back and forth about because I'm not entirely sure, that he's going to, because I'm just not sure if they can carry this many linebackers. But I really think there's a shot for Tyler Matakovich of Temple. He proved to be a solid tackler guy. I think the team lost Terrence Garvin. They lost a few special teamers this year. They're looking for guys that can make tackles, that can be tough dudes. And I think he just has that makeup to be one of those guys, to be a special teamer, to just make the roster, be a tough guy, and hang in there and be like an old school blue collar Steeler. And I think that like Benny Banaszak from the old 1970s, he's going to be one of those guys that you don't really talk about much, but you know, when people see him, they're like, hey, you know, that guy, he comes to work. He's a good player. So I'd say Matakovich, Finney, and Ayers. Those are my three sleepers. It might be tough to call Finney because he's a fourth round draft pick, but those are three guys that people might not know that they should look for in training camp.
Now, so you're not putting Jordan Zumwalt on your list?
You're a funny guy.
And he's still on the team. That's the crazy thing. This guy has not played. Has he played a preseason snap yet? Has he ever been in an NFL game?
He played preseason, but he didn't play. He has not played a regular season down. No. I think that he stands a shot, but he might get an over Matakovich. I'm just not sure that they I feel like if it was there, they would have seen it already. I feel like with Zumwalt, he's had the chance to prove himself, and he just hasn't done it yet. And I'm not sure that he's gonna if he had it, they would have put him on special teams already. And you would have seen more of him, but unfortunately he hasn't.
And the guys that you listed were probably some of the same guys that I would talk about, but I am going to bring up Zumwalt because Zumwalt, clearly, I think he's a guy that if they're trying to peg someone to replace Terrence Garvin, it would be him.
That's a good point.
I don't know if it's Matakevich or however you pronounce it. I apologize to the young man. I don't know how to say his last name. He's more of that solid inside linebacker. Yeah, you might want to keep that guy, but I don't think he's going to show much on special teams. You want someone that has a little bit of speed, a little bit more athleticism, and Zumwalt has that. Zumwalt can also play inside and outside. I think that might be a guy to keep an eye on, too. And I say that jokingly because earlier when I said, well, you don't have Zumwalt on your list, because to me, Zumwalt is a guy that he's never really had a chance, and he's been hurt and the hip injuries. That's not easy to come back from. We'll see if he shakes off all that nonsense and is able to stay. But just like you said, I feel like if they would have seen it by now, I look at it and say, there's a reason they're keeping this guy around. I mean, he's on his rookie contract. They could just cut him. They could just say, you know, look, buddy, you're hurt all the time. We're not going to keep you on the 90-man roster. We could fill it with another camp body or something like that. But they kept him on the roster. So that tells me something. But in other words, you're taking DeMarcus Ayers over Eli Rogers, basically as the fifth wide receiver in return man for the 2016 season?
Mm-hmm. I think Eli Rogers. That's a good pick. Yeah, Eli Rogers stands a chance. I mean, he was there last year. He was a guy that some people thought he'd make the team. He might have stood a chance. I like the shiftiness. When I look on tape at Ayers, I like the way that he moved, the way he ran, the way he shook off defenders. Eli Rogers, he wasn't as shifty, but of course, you know, if there's a lot of translation that goes from college to pros, we'll have to see. I also think that Shaquem Phillips, as Bob Pampiani will call him, his real name is Shaquem, but you know, the beloved preseason watchers of Pittsburgh football know that Bob Pampiani will forever call this man Shaquem. Shaquem Phillips. But he's a tall, fast guy. He made some nice plays in the preseason. I think that he could also take Eli Rogers. I just think that Ayers may be their return man, but you never know. The Steelers have their way of working things. I don't know how a lot of that works. There were times that I thought that we should have brought up Zumwalt, but you know I trust in Kevin Colbert and their decisions in bringing people up. Maybe it's this year, but I like Shaquem Phillips. I mean, Eli Rogers looks cool, but Shaquem Phillips, he has that mold of like a tall, fast receiver. I want to see what that's like.
Hey, I am not disagreeing with you. It's going to be interesting. And that gets underway next week. Now, I wanted to go back to a segment we used to run every week, my first year with BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, my first year with Lance Williams. I used to do my teed-off segment. Liz, you know me, I'm a big golfer, and I get angry about a lot of stuff. And a lot of times it's around the fan base. The Steelers fans can be a very spoiled bunch. You and I are no exception. Anyone that follows the Black and Gold knows that. It's basically Super Bowl or bust. And the expectations are still very high for the upcoming season. My soapbox rant today is based around an article that I wrote for the website yesterday or Monday, for those that are listening on Wednesday to the show. And it was based on the fact that I kept on reading these comments in the articles that we posted on BehindTheSteelCurtain.com, which essentially said, as long as this team stays healthy, we have to beat ourselves. I kept on thinking to myself, like, that's a really brash comment that you're making. I understand the injury issues that the Steelers had in 2015 with Pouncey and Roethlisberger and Bell, and I could keep going. Shazier got banged up, Bobby, D'Angelo Williams at the end of the season, Antonio Brown. We know that. It's been documented time and time again. My issue is, though, is to think that the Steelers, offensively and defensively, mind you, are perfect enough that if everyone stays healthy, there's no concern. Let's pump the brakes a little bit on the Super Bowl 451 celebration parade in mid-February.
Holy crap.
It's not that I don't think that it – what's that? What's going on?
Josh Harrison just hit a walk-off in the park home run.
Good for them. I know it was a close game, but I was following it. Hey, there's our umpire stand. Come back to me here. We'll talk about that in a second. Now, with this said, well, you know, everyone's saying – if they stay healthy, they're going to win it all. Pump the brakes a little bit. Let's not forget that this team offensively has struggled in the red zone, okay? And I understand everyone wants to say, well, you know, last year Roethlisberger missed that time. It's going to hurt the statistics. I get that. People want to say Le'Veon Bell was hurt. I understand that too. It's not – this offense is absolutely stacked. I mean, stacked to the max. I mean, you name the position, even without Martavis Bryant, and they've got a good 1-2 punch right there. You know, whether it's Wheaton and Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, D'Angelo Williams, Ladarius Green and Jesse James. I mean, you could go down the list. Here's what I'm trying to say. In the article I wrote, that there are definitely some issues with this team moving forward. And a lot of people looked at that as like, oh, I can't believe you wrote this. And they don't believe in the Steelers. You're a pessimistic guy, Debbie Downer type deal. No, not at all. Not at all. Let's keep in mind, though, that there are still some things. This defensive secondary was 30th in the league last year, and although they might be more athletic, they might have better ball skills, they lost a lot of experience last year. And you think that's going to jump up to the 15th or 10th ranked pass defense in a year? Well, they better get a great push from their front seven if that's going to happen. The offense, I talked about the red zone issues. Coaching. This is the same coaching staff that I remember in Seattle. They ran that fake field goal, and they had Landry Jones try to throw a pass to who? Alejandro Villanueva, an offensive tackle. Mike Tomlin has issues with clock management. There are things that Steeler fans need to realize. First, health is not a guarantee, okay? If they stay healthy, will they be set up for a potential run? Yes, no doubt about it. But staying healthy is not the only factor that matters for this team. So hold the brakes. Let's see how this team starts to put things together. Do they have potential? Absolutely. Am I excited as anyone for the season? You better believe it. I told my wife tonight at dinner, I said, you know what, I cannot wait for this football season. And she asked me why. I mean, I'm always excited. I said, I don't know. The Steelers are just going to be really, really good this year, I think. I mean, I think they're going to be almost scary good. You know, I've been watching some film of last year, and you see some of these plays that are being made. The defense was close last year, Chris. But I just want people to realize, like, it's a long road to hoe. And so you really got to make sure that you got to stay focused. But that's kind of my soapbox rant. I want people to understand health is big, but it's not the only factor for this team. There are still some issues out there for this 2016 Steelers team. I know that everyone's excited. I'm excited, too. But let's see how it plays out. Let's see how it plays out. You lose a couple games early, next thing you know, you're behind the eight ball. We'll see what happens. Let's hope that doesn't happen. for once, I'd love the Steelers to be one of those teams like the Bengals and the Patriots last year that were 7-0, 8-0, 6-0 even, and not 4-2 and right in the middle of the pack. So, Chris, you know, you can either comment on that or you can have your own piece. Now is the time to do it. What do you want? What do you guys say?
I mean, I think it's accurate. You know, it's a lot to say. You know, I'm one of those guys that when I look at my team, I try to look at them. I look at myself with things. I look at, you know, what can I do to be to better myself? Because I never want to, you know, when someone does better than me in something that I'm competing in, whether it's a video game or a test or an actual sporting event. Or just like a little card game or something. It's like, you know, I look at what could I have done better. So some people, because I say that a lot of times, you know what, the Steelers, they can only beat themselves, because I think that there's times that they are the better team. And I think that this team has had the potential for at least last season to be the best team in the NFL. And it's just they've kind of shot themselves in the foot on occasion. And sometimes shooting themselves in the foot is just an injury. But sometimes it's also just mistakes. I mean, they had no reason to lose the first Bengals game. They should have won that game. But Ben Roethlisberger threw way too many interceptions and he missed way too many easy throws. There's plays like that really haunt them. And like you said with the Seattle game, you know, and the Landry Jones one, I was like, yeah. I mean, I get it, what they were trying to do. And Villanueva was open. That's the thing about that. If you look back at that play, there was a guy in the vicinity, but he was not. He was not. If Landry Jones just floats that ball down the field, Villanueva could catch that and he has the first down and could walk into the end zone because he was behind everybody. So I mean, there was a real good chance of that happening. It's just that it didn't work for Landry Jones because Landry Jones is horrible. And if you ask yourself in that situation, in situations like that, why deviate from Ben Roethlisberger because he's such a good quarterback? And I said this to you last season, and I say this to a lot of people. My favorite mix when the Steelers have the ball is when you have Ben at quarterback, Bell at running back, and then you have three wide receivers and a tight end. Because then at that time, you have to account for Antonio Brown. You had to account for a Martavis Bryant, but now that won't be the case. But you got to account for Marcus Wheaton. You got to account for another fast receiver. You got to account for what was Heath Miller and will be at Adarius Green this year. And you got to account for Le'Veon Bell. That's just way too many headaches for any one team to consistently deal with. And when you look at that, it's like I think that that's something that, you know, I'd rather see on the field and just us play straight up football. Now I like our chances better than anything else. So like, yeah, that could be a mistake in going after Landry Jones, but I get why people say those things, Jeff, because they see the Steelers as, you know, one of the best teams in the NFL, and they can beat these other teams. But I understand your frustration because it's not that easy just to put it all together. It's not like, you know, if everyone just shows up to work on the same day and this is going to happen. There's a lot of things that have to fall into place every season for every championship team. And you saw it this year with the Broncos. When they were up and down, you know, at one point it looked like Brock Osweiler was going to be the hero. Then he was the GOAT, and then Peyton Manning was the hero just because he didn't lose them football games. And it was their defense that saved the day. You know, there's times when, you know, we thought the Seattle Seahawks were unstoppable, and then they got stopped by the Patriots, and, you know, they had their years. You know, no season is guaranteed. I mean, look at the San Francisco 49ers. Back in 2011, we were terrified because we were like, they might overtake the Steelers because they might win a Super Bowl and they have a young team. So they could very well just move on and win six and possibly even win seven in the next 5 years. And what happened, Jeff? They absolutely collapsed. They never won a Super Bowl. They never even got back to the Super Bowl after they lost to the Ravens. And, you know, now they're trying to rebuild with Chip Kelly. Good luck at that. You know, so nothing is guaranteed. I agree with you, Jeff. And people need to take a reality check with that, because a lot of people do expect a championship every season and that perfection all the time. But the reality is this: the Steelers do have a lot of the better, many players who they are of the upper caliber in the league, in Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown, Marquise Pouncey, Ben Roethlisberger, Cameron Hayward. You know, and that list can continue if you'd like with other players. like Shazier and Timmons, and we could talk about Tuitt and them. But you know, and David DeCastro, those are important names, and those are important players. That can they put it together? It's not easy just to put all that together and to win games all throughout the season when all these other teams are professionals coming at. Take it one game at a time. And right now, we just want to make it through camp, not see any injuries. Once we get through that, then we can focus on Monday Night Football in the nation's capital against Washington Redskins. So that's my take.
Absolutely.
I'm with you, Jeff. I feel your pain.
Absolutely. And so right now, we'll call it a show. It was an exciting walk-off finish for the Pittsburgh Pirates. For those of you that follow the Pirates, Josh Harrison with a triple scores on the errant throw. And they went pretty good, too. It's a back-to-back win for the Pirates. That's exciting. I want to remind all our listeners out there, not only the fact that the BehindTheSteelCurtain.com should be your number one source for Pittsburgh Steelers information, even during the dead season, but I also want to remind people of other podcasts that are coming out. We have our Fact and Fiction show, which has been on for about 2 or 3 weeks now. That aired on Monday night. You can go on and check that out on iTunes. You can listen to our show, The Standard is the Standard. We have some Steel City Underground episodes that we post, as well as a new show coming out, which is an NFL-based show, which should be airing on Thursday. So follow us on iTunes. Go to iTunes, search The Standard is the Standard, and please rate and review the post for the podcast for us. That would be great. And get ready for a great slate of podcasts and audio for you, as well as some great coverage for the Pittsburgh Steelers as training camp inches near. We thank everybody for listening. Chris, thank you for your time. I know you're a very busy man. And folks, 9 days away. So I got to say, the boys are back in town, back in Latrobe, starting on the 28th. Can't wait. We'll see you next time. Bye.